Welcome to the Newsman Weekly featuring me, Richland Source City Editor Carl Hunnell. Every Tuesday morning, we'll air a new show featuring guests and insights on what's making news in Mansfield and around Richland County. I'm also likely to share my own rather unique views on that news. So sit back, open your ears, drink your coffee, and enjoy the Newsman Weekly. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to this very first edition of the Newsman Weekly podcast. My name is Carl Hunnell, city editor at Richland Source. Happy to be joined today by my lovely producer, Zach Heiser. Zach, how the hell are you?
Good morning, Carl. I'm great. Happy Monday.
Yeah, you say that now, but you didn't look so happy when you had to be in the office before 9 o'clock. So,
that's okay. That's anything okay for you.
Well, thank you very much. Hey, guess what, folks? I got like 4 words for you, 5 words. I'm going to spell it out. Park Avenue West speed bumps. I was shocked to hear so many people on social media over the weekend who were themselves shocked to see speed bumps were placed on the Miracle Mile in Mansfield. Now, why was I shocked? This is because this is something that City Council has discussed for months and months. They actually approved putting speed bumps this summer, strategically, if I can say that word already, way back in April. They said they were going to be placed in June, so I was really surprised. I mean, all of this is aimed at reducing people from speeding up and down Park Avenue West from Trimble Road to Home Road. In recent years, law enforcement has complained about the number of people coming from out of town like Columbus and Cleveland on motorcycles and kind of really fast cars and kind of turning that whole section of road into not a very safe place to be on Friday and Saturday night. So back in April, City Council passed the cruising ordinance, which is when it becomes enforced, is going to restrict people's ability to continually go back and forth. Then they also talked about these speed bumps. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't think anybody really appreciates the humble speed bump when you're in a hurry and you have to slow down. The fact is that speed bumps have been saving lives for a lot of years. They're a tried and tested method of slowing people down. And keep that in mind. That's exactly why they're there. They're not there to damage your car. They're not there to do anything else other than to make you slow down. It's really vital in an area where people do tend to speed. We have seen fatalities on Park Avenue on Friday and Saturday nights. So they put up 2 sets. Is it 4 sets of 2 or 2 sets of 4? Anyway, they're out there before and after kind of the entrance to the Kroger shopping center parking lot. But when I was reading it, and I'm sure you saw some of these, Zach, once these speed bumps went up, social media literally exploded.
No.
Oh, yeah. Boom. Blew up. Well, not literally. But the people got their word knives out, and I thought I'd share some examples of things I saw. Here's one. Speed bumps on Park Avenue? Yeah, shops on the strip just lost our business. You're going to create unnecessary wear and tear on most of the population's vehicles to fix a problem when you've got quite a few other cures. Well, that's one.
No Taco Bell for them anymore.
No Taco Bell. Somebody said, I had to drive over the speed bumps, then all caps. Not fun. With 3 exclamation points. This is going to hurt businesses. So another person not very happy. But this one really got me. This one right here. All that's going to do is hurt Kroger's and the surrounding businesses. People will stop going on that road and just go do what they need to do elsewhere. And all those businesses are going to start hurting for what? To save a few lives?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I will sacrifice a few business dollars from somebody who can't buy their produce on a Saturday night at Kroger. And I'm pretty sure Kroger will, too, if it means people don't die.
Yeah, I think the people that are, drag racing, and they're going to go get groceries. And like you said, it's a lot of people from out of town, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I was talking with Jason Bauman, the police chief, he literally was saying back, and this started last fall when they started talking about this, they are seeing Columbus, Cleveland drivers who the word gets out because obviously, as we just saw, social media gets around. And it's like, hey, Mansfield's like the Wild West on Friday and Saturday nights. Mm-hmm. Come on down and race back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy. You can't do that.
Well, hasn't it been like that for decades?
Well, I mean, there used to be obviously there was cruising. And in fact, when you talk to some of the older people in city council, or you talk to Jason, talk to Keith Ports, all these guys grew up around here. I mean, cruising on the Miracle Mile has been something that's been around.
It's probably Mansfield since tradition.
Before. Yeah. But what it used to be is people driving back and forth, people stopping, parking their cars in the parking lots on both sides of the street, people getting out to look at those cars. It was a social event. And I think if that was still was what was going on, I don't think anybody would object very much. Mm-hmm. But that's not what's been happening out there lately. The police chief told city council, you know, this is not your father's Miracle Mile on weekend nights anymore. This is not what I grew up with. It's not what other people from around here grew up with. It became like a lawless zone. And yeah, now there's a cruising ordinance in place that we'll see how the police enforce that. These speed bumps, and it's funny because we got an email. Let me go down and find it. We got an email over the sometime yesterday. It said, glad to see common sense prevailed, and quite the outpouring of emails, I'm sure, and that the Park Avenue speed bumps have been removed after only one day. Well, not so fast. They were put there Friday afternoon. They were removed Sunday morning. And guess what? They're going to be back again this weekend, and the weekend after that, and the weekend after that, all the way until September.
Okay, so it's just a weekend thing.
Right. It's only going to be on Friday and Saturday nights. And they put them up. They can take them down. And it's specifically to stop people from racing. Mm-hmm. On a city street where the speed limit's 35 miles an hour, where you do have traffic, at least coming off of the north side, because there's still a shopping area over there. West Park Shopping Center, they don't get a lot of traffic these days, and unless you want to drive around back.
Sometimes I sit there in my car and, like, eat lunch.
So, yeah. Well, you can still do that, you know, or you can sit and stare at the buildings at West Park, which is a whole nother story, and think to yourself, I wonder what this used to be before it became a hellhole.
Right.
You know? But yeah, so, hey, social keyboard warriors, if you want to make your voices actually heard, rather than sit and type on Facebook, the next Mansfield City Council meeting is July 16th, on a Tuesday night. You're always welcome to come to those meetings. You sign up to speak. During public participation, your name is called, you come to the microphone, and you, for the next 3 minutes, because you are limited to 3 minutes, you can lay out your argument for why these speed bumps are a terrible thing.
Wonderful.
That's the place to do it.
Right.
Not
Facebook.
Not sitting in your father's basement, eating Cheetos, typing away on a keyboard.
Right. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling there won't be as much outcry at city council, but maybe.
Yeah, we'll see who actually comes and shows up. But
I wonder if they'll just move the racing to 4th Street or like...
Oh, don't give them suggestions. You know what? Go up to Norwalk Raceway Park.
Right.
There's a really nice drag strip up there. Soup your car up. Cruise on up the road. Take 13 right up by Norwalk and you can race to your heart's content in a legal, safe manner.
Go.
Not down Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of the weekend, what a weekend we had in downtown Mansfield. Jeez. We had the 10th annual Gay Pride Parade and Festival, which I don't know if people are paying attention, but it was the city's fourth parade in a month. They all follow the same route from the five-way light down Park Avenue and into Central Park. We had Memorial Day Parade May 27th. Miss Ohio Parade was June 9th. The Juneteenth Parade was June 15th. Every single parade went off without a hitch, and they were all well attended by local residents.
We love a good parade.
We love a
parade. Do we have an Independence Day parade coming up?
I don't think Mansfield has a 4th of July parade. I think we kind of cede 4th of July to Ontario.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about
that. Ontario does fireworks like 2 weeks early?
Yeah. I don't know about July.
We really have an opportunity to do like a good on the 4th parade and fireworks.
All right. We'll make a note of that, and I'll talk to Mayor Perry and see what we can do about getting a 4th of July parade. You know, and at the same time, we had that parade Saturday just a couple of blocks away. The annual Soapbox Derby was rolling down Main Street Hill. We started Soapbox Derby racing in Mansfield in 1937.
Wow.
And no, I did not cover the first one. There were about 40 youngsters from around North Central Ohio racing in this gravity-based vehicle event. Two blocks away from the Gay Pride Parade Festival, parade and festival, and I have not heard there were any problems of any kind. So that's always a good thing.
Always a good thing.
Two winners advanced to the International Soapbox Derby in Akron in July. And I'll throw this out. Kudos to the police department and the City of Mansfield Street Department for making all of these parades and events and festivals run smoothly. Because if you've ever seen it, the number of barricades that have to be moved quickly and swiftly and then put away and brought back out, it is a Herculean task. So kudos to the city for making all that work.
Hey, and we also had Newsroom After Hours on Friday night in our basement here at IdeaWorks Richland Source.
Now, that was a party.
You were there.
I was there. It's one of those things where I show up to party, and the next thing I know, I'm behind the bar schlepping beers.
You were. Yeah. You were. And we had the pump kegs, too.
So. Yeah, we had the pump kegs. We had some CO2 issues, but the folks of the Phoenix have assured me that won't be a problem the next time. But, yeah, I felt like I was back at Ohio University in 1979, pumping up a keg of Genesee Cream Ale. Yes, I drank Genesee Cream Ale.
No keg stands for you this time, though.
No, I can barely stand, much less do a keg stand. But yeah, it was. We had a great party downstairs, down in the basement. We had Jody Odom.
Yep, Luke Watson. Emily Raff.
Yep. Some great music.
Fantastic music. Everybody. Ohio Social Sports was there. We had cornhole in the back.
We had free food from Doc's Deli.
Free food from Doc's Deli.
Free beer from the Phoenix. I mean, anybody who thinks there's nothing going on in Mansfield needs to pay attention.
That's true.
Because we got all kinds of stuff going on. All right. The last thing I want to talk about today, kind of just in case you missed it, another two-word phrase, recreational cannabis.
All right.
If you missed the news last week, City Council voted 5-3 against a moratorium on recreational cannabis dispensaries in the city. And I had a hard time explaining this to people.
Yeah, people were confused at first.
I mean, a moratorium means no, you can't do it.
Right.
So when you
voted against
a moratorium, it means yes, you can do it.
Right.
So basically, City Council opened the door for companies in the cannabis industry to apply for a license from the state to operate such a retail outlet in Mansfield. It doesn't mean there's going to be one tomorrow. Doesn't mean there's going to be one on every street corner. What's going to happen next? I talked with Mayor Perry. Jody said that they're going to sit down now and work through zoning ordinances and regulations. Where can this place best be located if the state does issue a license to somebody to have one? You know, there's some state regulations. It can't be within so many feet of a school. They can't be within, you can't have one cannabis dispensary within a mile of another cannabis dispensary.
That's fine.
Yeah, there's some state regulation, but they want to figure out what the city needs to regulate as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to people. Some people said they were surprised that council voted the way it did.
Yeah.
You know, I've been watching this council for a while. This is not the same city council we had in 2017 that voted overwhelmingly against medical marijuana. I think this is a whole new group of people. I think the only person still left from then is Phil Scott, who's now the council president. And he didn't even vote in this one. He only votes in the event of a tie. I honestly thought it would go 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it might go 4-4, and then Phil would have to break the tie. I didn't know how Phil was going to vote, but I was not shocked to see Mansfield City Council do this.
New group of people from 2017, and it's, you know, that was 7-8 years ago. So I think the overall attitudes have changed. It's legal in more states and the world's not falling apart, seemingly. So so you said they're going to look at zoning. What is the earliest we could see a weed store in Mansfield? Asking for a friend.
Okay. Yeah. The first thing that they're going to be located is they're going to approve licenses where there are already medical dispensaries. So those will be the first ones out of the chute.
Which are none. There's none in Mansfield.
Yeah, there's none in Mansfield because right now they're still illegal in Mansfield. That's something city council might want to revisit. If you're going to make recreational cannabis legal, should we also not have medical?
Right.
But, you know, we're talking months away. You know, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Right.
The city's got time to kind of get their ducks in a row and see how this is going to happen. You know, I don't often do this, but I'm going to say it. Kudos to members of city council.
Oh, wow.
They introduced this way back in April. They took a lot of time discussing it during meetings. I know they took a lot of time talking to people in the community. They spent a lot of time talking to each other. Lots of emails. last week on the night of the vote, there were actually 24 people who actually spoke one way or the other, mm-hmm. most of them against, some of them for. But that's the most people I've seen speaking in city council since February of 2019.
Is that the skate park?
No. February, no.
Chickens?
Nope. Snow removal. You really want to take people off? Don't clear the snow off my street in the winter. But that was right after a big snow, and there are a lot of people really cheesed off that the city wasn't plowing snow. So that's the second biggest crowd. Yeah. We didn't get that many people for the skate park. And I wasn't really covering council at the time of the backyard chickens, but yeah, nobody wore a chicken head this time, so we didn't see any of that. But all right, real quick, what else is going on? I don't have a start date yet, but watch for the upcoming closure of Trimble Road to allow for the tunnel beneath the road that one day is going to connect to the B&O bike trail. Adena Corporation of Mansfield in May got a $1.2 million contract for a project that will allow bicyclists and pedestrians to safely cross under the busy street when that bike trail connector project is complete next year. I'll check with Bob Bianchi, the city engineer, but he told me back in May he expects that work to begin sometime in June, and we're running out of June. And when it happens, folks, Trimble Road is going to be closed for up to 45 days when the work begins. So when that happens,
reroute to Park Ave and go over the speed bumps.
That's exactly right. Just, reroute, find a way to Park Avenue and launch off.
Just give yourself a little more time, you know?
You know what? Everybody should do that anyway. Just relax. Oh, and did you know, Zach, Mansfield has a Shakespeare company.
I did not know that.
Yes, we do. And they've got a show coming up at South Park. A Midsummer Night's Dream is going to be performed Saturday, July 13th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, July 14th at 3:30 p.m. Admission is free. Donations will be welcomed and accepted. Bring your own snacks and beverages. I'm sure you will.
I like that.
All right. Well, that's enough from me and Zach
now. Enough rambling.
Get to the guest. We'll be back in just a moment with Louis Andres, the Public Works Director for the City of Mansfield. He's going to bring us all up to speed on the rapidly improving city parks. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Zach Heiser, producer of the Newsman Weekly. If you are enjoying Carl Honnell's hot takes on the local news and guests he is bringing to the show, why not be a part of it? We are looking for sponsors willing to join us in this weekly existential search for truth, justice, and the American way. Actually, we just want you to give us money in exchange for blatant promotion of your business to the millions of people who listen to this podcast. Okay, maybe not millions yet. But now is the time to get in on the ground floor of a brand new weekly podcast at Richland Source, the Newsman Weekly featuring Richland Source city editor Carl Hunnell. If you're interested in joining our team, contact sales@richlandsource.com, or you can reach out to myself at zach@richlandsource.com, or reach out to Carl and he'll direct you to the right people.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Newsman Weekly. My name is Carl Hunnell, city editor at Richland Source. And I am joined now by the man himself, Louis Andres, who recently started another new career.
Third
career as the City of Mansfield Public Works Department director. So, Louis, thank you very much for being here. It is a pleasure to see you, my friend.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Carl. I appreciate it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, you've been Mr. Parks and Mr. Nature for a very long time. So for the folks who don't know Louis Andres and how you came to be, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got to be the man you are today.
Well, I guess starting out as a child, I really enjoyed going to parks. And we lived in a neighborhood where we had a local city park right by in our backyard, and it had basketball courts. It had, baseball diamonds, and it had a big city pool. And we would spend most of our lives there at the parks and also at the city pools during the summer. So naturally, when I started looking for a career, I thought that, hey, what's out there that does with the outdoors and things? So very early on, probably at the age 14, I decided that I wanted to be a park ranger. And what I wanted to do was work at Yellowstone or someplace like that and interact with people, talk about nature, and talk about being recreation, hiking, backpacking, So a lot of the things I did as a hobby or things I enjoyed doing, I enjoyed backpacking. I hiked part of the Appalachian Trail. I went out west and hiked part of the Grand Canyon and the Pacific Crest and things like that. I also got involved in photography and history. I really enjoyed the history part because the parks all were preserving part of a history. So I enjoyed that part of it as well. So when I decided to go to college, I said, hey, what field would be a good one to go into? So I picked botany because I guess I dreamed of being a forest ranger sitting up in a fire tower overlooking all these mountains and everything. But when I got there, my advisor says, you know, you have people skills. You're wasting your time sitting in a fire tower looking at trees. You need to start working with people and taking your love of nature and teaching it to kids and things. So I changed my major from botany to education at Miami University. And I strategically picked Miami University because right next to Miami University is Houston Woods State Park, which I grew up there as a kid. So I volunteered there. So I took care of cleaning out the rat cages and taking care of injured owls and different animals that came in. And I would do programs with the owls and talk about nature and all the different things like that. And I really enjoyed that.
I have to interrupt you for just 1 second.
All right.
Did you just say cleaning out rat cages?
Right, because we had a lot of raptors there. It was a raptor rehabilitation center, so we had to feed the animals. So we would raise rats to feed as that and also pick up roadkills and things as well.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's your first job. That's your entry level into being a naturalist is you got to clean all the cages and everything. So that's how I started out. And then while I was at Houston Woods, they go, hey, would you be interested in being a seasonal naturalist? Which they hire about 34 naturalists to go to all the different state parks. And I go, yeah, it pays. So, yeah, that would be great. So my first seasonal job was at Rocky Fork State Park, which I grew up as a kid going there. We had friends, and we always went to Rocky Fork. And then I ended up at Houston, out of Houston Woods, but then I also ended up at Mohican State Park in 1980. So I was one of three naturalists there. We did all the programming. We'd have a nature hike, a night hike. I'd have 200 people show up to go on a night hike. And so we had a lot of different activities and things as a naturalist there. So as I was finishing up the summer at Mohican State Park as a naturalist, they approached me and said, hey, would you be interested in being a ranger? And I go, yeah, you know, because I'm always out there as a naturalist and I see people littering and see people doing things they shouldn't be doing. And I couldn't do anything about it, you know, because I was just a naturalist. And so, well, if I was a ranger and I saw these things and I could, you know, be proactive and do some enforcement and things of that nature. So after the summer of 80 at Mohican, I went into the Ranger Academy there. And that was down at Beetler Armory, and Columbus was where the academy was. And we were there for about 6 months, and we learned everything you needed to know from rappelling to law enforcement, investigation, all that. And I really liked that a lot. And so when I graduated from the academy there, my first tour of duty was at East Fork State Park, which is in Claremont County, southern Ohio. So that's where I started as a ranger and started out doing all those things.
All right. So I think when I met you, and this might date both of us, but I think I remember coming across you in 1992.
That's when I came up here to Malabar Farm.
So you came to Malabar Farm State Park in 1992. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's one of those things that you just get this call from the chief and say, Louie, can you come down to the office here in Central, what we call Central Office there in Columbus? So I didn't go, we have a situation at Malabar that we think you would be ideal for. And I go, okay. So at that time, there was a lot of controversy going on at Malabar because we had the budget cuts. They got rid of the cow herd. There wasn't a lot of activity going there. And a lot of the citizens thought that the state was poised to close down the farm. And that was very upsetting for most of the people here. So my goal was to come back into the community and assure the community that the state of Ohio was committed to Malabar Farm and that we were going to put in the resources and everything to improve and make things better there. So that was my first job here, was to bring Malabar Farm up to what we consider standards that most of our parks have. And that's the first time I've ever had any introductory to farming. I loved the history part of it, and I love the recreational part of it. And since I was at Mohican as a naturalist, I would bring groups, auto tours over to the farm and talk about Bromfield and all that as far as the conservation and things. So I already was familiar with it, but that was 1980 and this was 92. So it was 12 years since I had had any exposure at all to Malabar. So when I first came to Malabar, I realized there was really a lot of different unique things that had to be done at the farm. You know, being a historical site, being a working farm, and then also being a state park. So it was all three of those things. So I really had to get up to speed with the agricultural part. So the Malabar Farm Foundation helped sponsor me take an agricultural leadership program through Ohio State that was 2 years. And I took that and I learned a lot of stuff about agriculture, but also got a lot of networking and things. So when it was time for me to develop a plan, I had a lot of these experts in agricultural field. They were to help me. And that was the reason why I started the Malabar Farm Foundation, was to have that as advisory board, also help with funding and things that I knew the state wasn't able to do. Because we did a lot of different things that no other park did, like breeding animals and having all the history and stuff of the big house and things of that nature. So it became very challenging for your typical parks person to come in and operate because of that diverse and uniqueness of that operation there.
Yeah, there's really no other, and there wasn't at the time, but I don't think there is today, any other working farms at a state park in the state of Ohio.
Actually, there's none whatsoever because I was trying to find some type of model to emulate. But what I found out that was very unique because he had international reputation. He was an author. He was a conservationist. It was a historical site. And little people did some – the National Park Service had some things down the Smoky. They had a working farm there. But it wasn't historical. It didn't have all the significance and things. And there was other little places that had working farms and all that, but nothing to the extent that was at Malabar. So I was kind of on my own. So after I started doing that, then I started getting other people contacting me. Hey, I hear you're doing this, because a lot of them were trying to emulate what we were doing. Particularly at Cincinnati, they had a farm that was donated to them, and they had no idea how to start doing programming and things. So I would help Cincinnati park system there develop some things for their farm, working farm and stuff there. And then also there was the Cleveland Metro Parks had farm park there, and they were doing very similar stuff, but they didn't have the historical aspect. They had just the working farm. Right. So it was very challenging, but I enjoyed it. I found it very rewarding. I found it something that's probably the highlight of my career. It was probably the longest place I stayed. I stayed there for about 23 years, which is the longest I stayed any place. Usually you work two, maybe 3 to 5 years, and then you move on. So I started in Cincinnati, and then I ended my career all the way up at Lake Erie. So I worked my way northward.
So you left Malabar, career over, first career kind
first
of
career,
over.
Yes.
And you went to your second career. Talk about that.
Well, right after I retired from ODNR after 33 years of service, I'm not one to kind of sit still. I need to have something. So for about 3 months, I was able to get some projects done at home, and then it was just driving me crazy. I needed to do something. So I stopped by Pleasant Hill and talked to a couple people that I knew, Dan Majors and Bill Martin, and say, hey, I just need something that I just want to do during the summer, you know, programs, whatever. I said, well, we need a naturalist to bring our naturalist programming up and help put Pleasant Hill on the map. And I go, yeah, I can do that. That's no problem. There's a part-time. It was part-time. It was during the summer. I go, perfect. So I started that. And my goal was to let people find out what Muskingum Watershed was. A lot of people had no idea. They thought it was part of Mohican. So we had kind of identity crisis. So I did that for 10 years. And we were one of the few parks that actually increased our attendance and revenue because we were getting out there in the community. And that was something I felt very strongly about, is getting out in the community. And usually the first place when I would go to a community, the first place I would go would be what we called CVBs. Right now it's Destination Mansfield. And learn about the tourism park, because parks are very part of the tourism as far as the local community and everything. So that was the first thing that I did. I looked up the Mansfield CVB. I met Lee Tassif, and he and I got off very well. And I said, well, I'll be on your board if you be on my board. So at that time, we started Malabar Farm Foundation. Lee was part of the founding members of that, and I was part of the Destination Mansfield now. And I've been there for over 30 years with the Convention Bureau on that part, too.
Well, talk a little bit about when. All right. So you're Pleasant. Were you at Pleasant Hill when Jody called you?
Yes, I was.
Talk a little bit about how that conversation went when the mayor-elect, and when exactly did she call you?
Well, I had known Jody through being with the Convention and Visitors Bureau or Destination Mansfield, and I got a text, and I really it just said, would you be interested in a job? And at that point, I had no idea what it was going to be, and I knew Jody, and I just maybe remembered her getting elected as the mayor, but I wasn't sure was running for mayor. But I said, yeah, I'm interested. Can we talk more? So we set up a time that I met with her, and we sat down, and we probably talked probably about 2.5 to 3 hours explaining what she was looking for and what I was able to bring to the table. And her main concern, or one of her things that she wanted to target, was the parks. Because the city of Mansfield parks have been shut down for 8 years. They just had a levy that was passed, and they were struggling. They had a lot of property, and things were not being maintained, and they were getting a lot of negative criticism for what we were doing at the parks at the time. And she knew that my background was very good with parks. And then Lee said, well, if you want somebody to get something done, Louie's the guy to do it. He's the go-to, get-her-done type thing, which is very true. I like to get into something and get it done and get things moving. So that was one of the things that she wanted to do, is take care of the parks and get some things done for the city of Mansfield.
Yeah, I will admit I was a bit surprised. I actually didn't cover the story that day, but when our reporter told us that you were the city's new public works director, my first thought was, what's Louie know about storm sewers? What's Louie know about street cleaning or cleaning off snow? But then I realized, you know what? And I agreed with Jody when I saw her quote was, Louie is a people person. Louie gets along with, he can get things done. He knows the right people. So when I started thinking about, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize the public works director, with the exception of the police and fire department, the courts and finance, you kind of oversee Everything else. So,
yeah.
I mean, before we really dive into the heart of this, which is what you've got going on with the parks, what's it been like to suddenly be the guy in charge of bill collecting and storm sewers and the airport and everything else that goes along with it?
Yeah, one of the things I did was I got on the city's website and find out exactly what did the public works director do. And then when I started listing, I go, oh, my goodness, there's 13 different departments that are under public works. And a lot of them I knew very little about. But like you said, you know, managing people and managing budgets and just getting organizing things, that's standard no matter what job you have. I mean, if you can't communicate and you can't organize your time, no matter what your background is, you're not going to be successful. So one of the things that I looked at is that okay, this is kind of at the end of my career, my third job as I've been retired. This would be a neat thing to do that I've never really experienced, and I probably do have the skills needed to do that. At least Jody said that I did. So once I got into that, I go, you know, this is really kind of interesting. I found it very challenging, but I also found it very rewarding as well. Because a lot of the things we do impact every citizen. Every one of our citizens uses our streets. They use our parks. They use our water. All those different things like that. So we are able to touch everybody's lives in public works. And so we need to make sure that we're responsive to the community. And I'm good about getting into community and talking to people and listening and figuring out what it is we need to do to make a positive impact on these people in these types of services. So I think we met on a Friday, and I got back with her on Monday after I talked to my wife, and she goes, you know, this is a good way to end your career, you know, hopefully, you know, in a positive way. And I go, sure, I'll go ahead and do it. So I told Jody that I would be accept a position. And that first day, I was just expecting just to be overwhelmed. But at the end of that first week, I think everybody I respect decided not to call or not to do anything. So I said, well, this is pretty easy. Yeah, I said, well, I thought this was going to be hectic, people calling and all that. And it was really kind of a nice transition that first week. I was able to figure out, get settled in, moved in, figure out who the people were. And I was really amazed how many overlapping people that I did through my networking, who I talk with and things like that. So people would call up and say, hey, Louie, you remember me? And I go, yeah, I do remember you a couple years ago or whatever. So I found out that I already had a lot of those connections on the government side that I had developed when I was at Malabar with ODNR and MWCD. So it made me feel like, okay, I have these networks, I can use these, and it can help me get started. And that's the reason why it was so successful, because I already had some people that I was already networking with. So it made a very good, it made a good transition for me, and I was able to pick it up very quickly. I was concerned it was going to take me a while to learn all this stuff, but I'm a hands-on person, so I spent half of my time out in the field meeting the folks, meeting the buildings, going to the parks, and realized, wow, Mansfield has a lot of diverse parks and has a lot of facilities, and a lot of them just need some first impression or some makeup on them sometimes. Right. You know, when you go into a building and it's not painted and the gutters got trees growing in it, the pavement hasn't been painted or sealed, concrete is all broken, things. Those are things that we could do fairly quickly and make a good impact. And so I sat down with Mark and with some of the other people and say, here's what we need to do. We need to address the issues that we're seeing from the public, and we need to come up with a plan that we can start doing some of these incremental things, where it's just painting something, putting a new playground in, just a lot of different things that are just very simple things to do but have a big impact.
Just as a reminder for those who aren't familiar with kind of the history of city parks in Mansfield, but I think it was in 2009 when the city went into state-ordered fiscal emergency, and as part of that 5 years, there was no parks department in the city of Mansfield. It was just shut down. The state said, you can't afford to have parks right now. So when the city got out of fiscal emergency in 2014, along the way, they convinced voters to approve the Pride Tax. Now, Pride Tax pays money to police and fire. It pays money to parks. I think there's street lighting, things like that. Mm-hmm. But a certain percentage of that, was it 22% of the Pride Tax?
Something like that, yeah.
Goes to fund city parks. And when it was passed, I think that amounted to about $3.7 million a year went to city parks. No, take that back. $3.7 million total, about $750,000. Went to city. I didn't mean to give you a raise.
I was going to say the calculations there. So yeah, it's about $700,000 to $800,000 annually that it helps parks, city parks.
And then for a decade, the only money that parks got came from that Pride revenue. There was no general fund money coming in. So the parks kind of languished a little bit. A few years ago, I think the city divested itself of some of the parks, a lot of the smaller ones especially. So when you took over, this is a parks department that between 5 years of fiscal emergency and 10 years of kind of threadbare existence where most of the money was used to mow the grass, they needed somebody like Louie to come in and say, what can we do with the budget? And then you and Jody this year convinced city council to throw a little bit of general fund money into the parks as well. So kind of talk me through what you've done so far, kind of the 10,000 feet overview of what you've done in the first 6 months.
Well, one of the things that we identified was that we had identified those parks that we had projects that we could get done in. Okay, so like Liberty and South Park and North Lake, those were all had very good facilities there, but they just needed to get some cleaning and some painting and things of that nature. Then there were some other parks that were going to be what we considered undeveloped. And now we have some areas like Deer Park and those that have really remote areas that we don't have a lot of facilities. So we had to come up with a plan. Okay, we only had so much money and we only had so much staff. And at the time, the parks were barely struggling just to keep everything mowed and to keep basically things cleaned. And they were struggling with that. So the first thing we identified, okay, where's our priorities going to be? And second of all, do we need to get some seasonal help and stuff? So one of the first things I did, we need seasonal help because we just can't just mow the lawns and that be done. we have to do some other things as well. So we actually brought on 3 seasonal staff this year, along with our full-time staff, and we're able to make some progress above what is basic cleaning and basic mowing the lawns. And what was really nice when I first came, there was actually a master plan that was done in 2020 about the parks and suggestions from a consultant. So I sat and read that for a couple days and figured out, okay, here is somebody that's taken the work, that's got community input. I mean, they went around and decided from the different communities what was their priorities. And then we had a professional consultant say, here are the things that we need to be doing for each park. Here are some of the parks that we could get rid of or you know, hand off to another agency or whatever. And here are some of the strategies that we need to work on as far as recreational facilities. So that was very helpful. Not having that, I probably would have spent most of my time trying to figure out where we needed to go and what the public said. So this actually streamlined things and got us up and running more quickly. So I still use that on a regular basis going back. So we started doing simple things. I started meeting with the staff and say, listen, you know, you guys are getting a lot of negative feedback. Whether it's warranted or not, that's immaterial. We need to move from this point forward. We need to do some positive things and gain that public trust back because we are a public agency and we have people that use our facilities and we need to listen to them because they're the ones that's going to use it. So if they want a playground or they want to see this, those are the things we need to identify and prioritize, and we got to find the money to do those things. And I said, as sooner we do that, we'll got to see some positive feedback. So we started looking at things that we can do, like pulling out rotten posts, getting rid of signs that have been there for 50 years, just those first impression items. That was one of my key thing was first impression items need to be taken care of. So if we pull into a park and it looks like it's not being taken care of, the public isn't going to be accepting that. You know, they passed this pride fund, as you said. They expect that money to be wisely invested and they want to see improvements. So that was our key thing was first impression. The second was health and safety issues. So health and safety issues can be like buildings that are in bad repair, things that aren't clean, litter that's not picked up, those types of things. And then our other one was revenue producing, because we do bring in some revenue because we have certain events there. We have pavilions that we rent out. So people are using our facilities. So how can we increase our revenue? How can we improve the park's health and safety and those first impression items? And I sat down with the staff and say, here are our priorities. And when you see something, and I took some of the staff out and say, what do you see? And a lot of times when you're driving, you know, your own self, you drive past something so long, you don't see the obvious things. You don't see that missing sign or you don't see that that's not being taken care of. So once our staff realized that there was a way of looking at the parks, they started picking up and doing things on their own, which is what we wanted to do. We didn't want to have to go out to staff, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. I wanted them to learn on their own what the priorities were and use their own initiative and go out and make those changes. And they really embraced it. They were repairing benches that have not been repaired, but painting things, cleaning up things and all that that had not been done. So that was a good way of getting our staff engaged in that, but also helping the community support what we were doing as well.
Now, I'm going to tell you a couple of Mark Abrams stories. Mark, of course, is a longtime kind of parks director. When I was talking to Mark last week, he told me a couple of things. One, he said, Louie really frustrates me and it makes me mad. I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, he'll suggest or tell me to do something and I'll think to myself, that won't work. He goes, so then I do it and it works and it just makes me mad because I didn't think it would work and Louie was right.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Mark's background was not with parks. So and me coming in with that, I can say, hey, you know, after 40 years of working in parks, I have a pretty good idea of what's going to work and what's not going to work. Yeah, not everything's going to work because city parks are different than county parks, it's different than state parks and all that. But we're all dealing with people and we're all dealing with communities that mainly use the parks. They use it to recreate. They use it to go and relax. They use it to maybe run, walk their dogs, that type of thing. So looking at that mindset, we have to be looking at things that we have to listen to our constituents. We have to listen to our community as well. And I know one of the big things that our community is saying, they want to see a pool. And we would like to see a pool too, but we want to be very strategic and we want to plan this out. We don't want to rush in and start doing something and later on say, you know, that didn't work, or we wasted money on something that's not going to be successful. So we are going to be engaging the public. We are going to be using that master plan that we did, and we're going to be using some consultants that specifically deal with municipal pools and see what we can come up with for the city of Mansfield.
Now, the other thing, when I was talking with Mark, and I mean, those who know Louie know he's a fairly even-keeled, soft-spoken kind of person. But Mark said, when Louie tells you to do something, he expects it to be done. And I think he gave me an example of something about a spillway that hadn't didn't get cleaned as quickly as you wanted it to. And he goes, Louie wants you to get done what he tells you to get done. So somewhere in that soft-spoken voice, there's a little iron in that. So talk about what your expectations are for the folks who work for you.
When someone works for me, one of the things is I want them to understand what my expectations are. And I want to make it very clear that when I maybe subtly say, hey, it might be a good idea to maybe take care of the spillway, for example. You know, there's sticks there, there's goose poo. It just looks bad. It's the first impression I'm. As soon as you pull in the park, that's the first thing you focus on when you come in there. So number one is a first impression item. And that's really key when I talk to my staff. Get those things taken care of that people drive by day after day after day. Okay. The other thing is I'll give you a reasonable amount of time to take care of that issue. Okay. So if I think it's going to take you a week or two, then I'll say, okay, let's get this done. And if you don't schedule in a couple of weeks, I go, why isn't this getting done? You know, are there extenuating circumstances like the pressure washer's down, we're waiting for parts, or our time schedule doesn't allow it because we're too busy doing this? But then if that, I would say, you know, today's the day. Let's get it done today. And then when that happens, and I've pretty much limited all my options, I've given you time to take care of it yourself and you haven't, I have to provide a little bit more direction. So most of the time I will give people the reasonable amount of time to get it done. And if I don't think it's done in that, then I say, okay, now we got to move to the next step. Let's get it done. Get all the resources.
Now, something I also saw last week, and I mean, the city went a few years with just a combined public works safety service director. Dave Ramey kind of had to do both jobs. But I saw last week, at first at Liberty Park and then at John Todd Park, kind of cooperation between public works and the safety services in a relatively inexpensive way to help children and families kind of beat the heat, at least for a little bit, when there is no city pool. I saw you, I saw Keith Porch, I saw the fire department out there. So that was kind of a cool thing. Talk about your relationship with the safety services group and how something like that comes to happen.
Yeah. When I had the interview with Jody said, I'd like for you to meet, you know, Keith is going to be the public service director at some point when he retires from the police. So I sat down with Keith and boy, did we hit it off. And we have very similar personalities, very similar strategies and things like that. And between the mayor, Keith, and myself, we are all on the same page. It really gelled. And that was really one of the decisions I decided to take the position because I saw that she was putting people in positions that had very similar to me and was a go-getter type thing. I didn't want to have somebody saying I had to work with that didn't have to share the same passion or the same level of expediting things. So we work very close. I see Keith every day and sometimes twice a day. We're always communicating back and forth. And those two positions are very critical. How one person could ever do that, I do not know, because it is everything for me to keep up with what I'm doing, and every bit is Keith on his side. So having two people, also we can play off each other and say, hey, what do you think of this, or vice versa. So we're always asking each other, what do you think of this situation to do differently and things. So I think it's nice having that duo because we're able to cover for each other. We were able to play off each other and get some things done in cooperation. So I have to say one thing about this administration. It truly is Team Mansfield. We are a team, and we're working with everybody, and we have one goal is for the community, improve the community, and provide for our citizens.
Now, I guess one last question. You've got a big event, and I'll give you a second to kind of promote this. Big event coming up July 12th out at Liberty Park. I mean, there's been a myriad of changes and improvements out there. Tell us a little bit about what you've got planned on July 12th, as much as you can. Anyway.
Yeah. It's still in the planning stages, but July 12th is going to be our Sunfest festival. And originally it was just like in the evening, and we're going to be talking about all the different things that's going on at Liberty Park. But since we've had a lot of synergy and a lot of projects going on, we said, well, let's just make it the whole day and let's showcase those things that we are doing there and let people see and experience that. So we're completely redid the playground there. The restrooms, we had a church group come in and build the pedestrian bridge there, the wooden pedestrian bridge. We poured all the concrete and everything and make it ADA accessible. We're working with the skate park to get that up and running well. We work with the VFW to rededicate that flagpole and put a nice solar light and everything on that as well. We got a grant from the Coca-Cola Foundation to redo the basketball court. We also work with Madison Schools to get the baseball diamond up and running there. We run a hydrant there for water. We're going to be repaving the roads. We're taking the bathhouse there that we currently have and repurposing that as an open shelter pavilion. That way you can still have community events there. It's large enough. You can probably have two different things going at the same time. We paved the area, upgraded the electric and the water so that we can have food trucks there if we have other special events there as well. Liberty is one of those spaces that is large enough that we can have a lot of things going on. One thing about a lot of our city parks, a lot of them are small little community parks, which are great. But Liberty happens to be one of those larger areas that we had the potential to put a lot of different stuff in there. So we're looking at different things that we can add there to enhance that. But the 12th is going to be showcasing all those things that we've done there. Let people come and experience that, see the new basketball court. We'll have food trucks there. We'll be giving out swag from Coca-Cola. There'll just be a lot of things for a lot of different folks. So even if you're not into basketball, there's going to be things going on. If you're into the nature, there's going to be nature things going on. If you just want to come and relax, you can do that as well. So the 12th is going to be kind of our culmination of all the successes that we've done there at Liberty and showcase those.
Well, very good. I knew when I wanted to start this Newsman Weekly podcast, I wanted to have a great guest to have right out of the gate. And I knew, Louis Andres, that you would be somebody who could come in and do just that. So I want to say thank you very much for being with us. And I can't wait to see what you and Jody and Keith come up with, because you still got 3.5 years in this administration to fix a lot of things. So
yeah,
thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. And hopefully I come back again, kind of give you an update as we get through the season.
You bet. Well, that's it. That's a wrap on this week's edition of the Newsman Weekly. If you weren't blown away, I hope you had fun and maybe learned something along the way. Anyway, thanks for listening, and please support our work by becoming a member of Richland Source by visiting richlandsource.com/members. Have a great rest of the week, and hey, I'll see you next Tuesday.